Everything's against me and it's got me down. If I jumped in the river, I would probably drown. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive. These shabby shoes I'm wearing all the time, they're full of holes and nails. Brother, if I stepped on a worn-out dime, I bet a nickel I could tell you if it was heaven or hell.
Lemon face. Lemon face.
All right. Does he mean old as in, like, the movie old, or...
Yeah,
or,
good question.
Because old. M. Night Shyamalan is back. Damn it.
Hartnett killed it, and I'm here for his comeback.
Oh, yes. You hate. First off, you hate when people say, "I'm here for this."
Yeah, I do.
So get rid of it.
Right, and also, this is the misappropriation of absolute banger, which is nearing its shelf life. Like it's been there. It's time to retire.
Mm-hmm.
Absolute banger.
Okay,
take it out.
Get it out of here.
Especially when referring to Trap.
I mean, unless it is.
It doesn't matter.
An absolute banger.
Also, the other egregious thing here is I'm here for his comeback. Let us give his comeback the proper credit, which is Oppenheimer and fucking Black Mirror. So I get that this is a continuation of it, and he's center stage in the movie, but no.
I guess the movie could be trash, but Hartnett is good in it, maybe. Yeah.
Hartnett's
I
had like...
I believe that, too.
Yeah.
Because he's fine.
He's had like five comebacks. His whole career is just a comeback movie and then nothing.
He just needs to bring that haircut back from...
He's thick now.
Faculty?
What? Yeah. Did you say he's thick now?
Yeah, he's like a dad now. He's like got a big build now. Like he's sticking around. He's the one now.
Well, you know who else is sticking around? The Who Goes There podcast for episode 421. This is Jorge.
This is Daddy! Mommy!
This is
Jacob.
Oh, who is it?
You missed it!
Oh, no. This is Screen Rant's Joseph Dekelmeyer praising Shyamalan's masterclass in building suspense. Psych! Mommy! I can't do it either. This is Reed.
Wow. You're prepared to hate it, which I'm
prepared even if it's good to act like it's not.
Yeah, I'm here for that.
There is a time for that,
yes.
In my opinion, and this is that time.
Well, I do that frequently.
That's what I mean. That's another term, hater. Like, that to me is being a true hater. A hater isn't just like, I don't like something and I'm being vocal about it. It's like when you actually think it's worthwhile, but you've already decided to drag it down, so you have to just commit to it.
Yeah, you have no other option.
Now that's true hating. That's the essence.
Well, here we are, post Comic-Con weekend.
Yeah.
Did anything significant come out that we should talk about?
Come on, they're not going to hear this for 2 months anyway. When they've already it's already been other theories that other people are doing the actual non-variant version of Doctor Doom. And Kamala Harris has dropped out of the presidential race.
And
Donald Trump has his second fake assassination attempt.
Oh, you think they're going to do it again?
I don't want to alienate listeners. I would never want to do that.
Well, there's a theoretical chance that half of our listeners are huge Donald Trump supporters.
No, they may not be, but they may not. Some may just be like, oh, he likes conspiracies. Oh. No, but what else did they announce? They did a great fucking drone presentation.
The Deadpool thing?
And fucking Galactus.
Yeah.
The Fantastic Four, Galactus, Deadpool. Yeah. The whole thing.
Yeah.
Pedro Pascal is going to be, what's his name, right?
Mr. Richards. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Which I'm here for.
Vanessa Kirby.
I'm here for that. And those other two dudes.
One, Joseph Quinn. And then as Johnny.
He's got a face that I can't quite get on board with.
He's got a face that I can't quite erase.
Yeah.
Who's Joseph Quinn?
He's the guy from Quiet Place, the British guy.
Oh, okay.
And Stranger Things.
He's Human Torch?
Yeah, he's Johnny
Storm. He's a human dude.
Yeah. And then the guy from The Bear.
He's human.
Well, Carmi's cousin in The Bear. He's the Thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
The Bear.
Yeah.
Have you guys, have either of you watched the new season of The Bear?
It's hard to
get. I haven't seen season two
yet. I've watched like an episode and a half and I'm having trouble like finding the motivation to keep going.
So it's setting up its threads, hopefully.
I don't know.
It's moving a little different.
It's weird. Yeah, it's a strange one.
Well,
in a violent nature, number two was revealed.
Yes, it's in the works. You guys want to give your shot at the title?
There's a, I mean, it's not in a violent nature too?
No, dude, I'm hoping for something a little more ambitious.
Too violent, too nature?
Oh, yeah. Dude, now you're talking.
Or maybe a history of no country and old nature for men of violence. Or maybe no country and old nature for men. Or maybe...
What the hell?
Or... Because I look at in a violent nature. Like, what are you talking about? But, yeah, are you, well...
What do I feel? I feel nothing from the news.
I feel numb.
Yeah.
Well, Jessup, our buddy from Philadelphia, from the now defunct...
Posthumously.
But, yes, he... Say You Love Satan podcast. Go listen to that. I'm sure it's... Is it up there anymore? Did they take it all?
Oh, they wouldn't have taken it down. It's still...
I think you did.
Like the whole thing?
I don't know. Who fucking knows? Find out if you're curious. And some of you already know and are like, idiots! You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, he said, fuck the haters. Hell yeah. He's all about... He liked it in a violent nature.
Yeah.
He's all about part two. And that just goes to show how divisive these... How polarized we are as a country right now. We need to heal the division in the horror community. We need to bring the Annabelle 5 crowd and the In a Violent Nature 2 crowd and the A24 Neon crowd together.
Damn.
Wow.
And have a barbecue.
Was it Long Legs that surpassed Neon's biggest... release?
Oh, it's the biggest.
It beat Talk to Me.
Yeah. Well, and not only legs, it's
North
not
America.
Only the biggest opening weekend, but it's the highest grossing Neon film.
That's wild.
Yeah. Already.
Yeah, it beat. Yeah, beat Talk to Me North America, but not globally yet. Long legs. Yeah.
And that's, I think, naturally when we, that's the film we're discussing later on in a few minutes. But a big part of the conversation of that movie has to be the marketing, I think, a little bit.
Yeah.
It's one of the...
It's
clearly one of the more effective marketing campaigns for...
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about it more. There's moments in that movie that are generating so much viral memes and shit. Long Legs. Mm-hmm. And Talk to Me, the same thing, the music. And like everyone in TikTok was like the most trending song was that some of the music and Talk to Me.
Have you seen the TikToks for Chauncey the Bear? From Imaginary? Me either.
You fucking... Yeah, right? Exactly.
Got him.
How come they didn't...
There's no viral tarot.
Didn't get, yeah. There's no viral tarot.
Oh, man. That's a swing and a miss on their part.
Yeah, dude.
What was I going to say? Yeah, I don't think anything else came out from Comic-Con that I had any interest of.
I'm sure there did. I didn't even look at all the updates yet, honestly.
There wasn't much. I looked, too. It was mainly just all that Avengers stuff yesterday. I guess for video game fans, if you're into Mortal Kombat, the Mortal Kombat 1, they announced a new season pass for that, and it's
great.
Ghostface, Conan the Barbarian, and the T-1000, and some... Noob Saibot, Sektor Cyrax, and they bring back Animalities.
Keep fucking giving us season passes for everything, man. Just keep dumping money into stupid video games.
$40 season passes.
Holy shit, bro.
That's right. You been watching anything,
Jorjito? So, finished up the season of this last season of The Boys.
The Boys.
It was all right. I think people were pretty harsh on it because there wasn't a whole lot of story happening, I think by and large, I like the season. There's some things that they're doing to poor Huey. That's like, man, can we just leave this poor fucker alone? I don't know if you guys heard about it at all. Like the sex torture scene.
I've been on the periphery of this. I've never watched the show.
Oh, okay.
And I heard about some controversy for this.
It's season. Just this poor guy, man. Is spoiler for anybody who hasn't watched, but he has some shit with his dad go down, and then the next episode he gets tortured for 30 minutes in a fucking sex dungeon, which is like, damn, we're really not letting this guy rest.
So it's Game of Thrones season 4. go on.
Oh, yeah, with what's his face?
What was it? Was it Ramsey? The Bolton?
Reek.
There's Reek, yeah.
Yeah.
Reek. That's me.
No, you're
no,
Reek?
No, no.
But movie-wise, let's see. We started watching this film called The Spaceman, which we're about maybe 30 minutes in. And we didn't watch the trailer, so we just started the movie.
Whoa!
And then the reveal happens. You guys know about this fucking thing?
Yeah, yeah. Paul Dano's
fucking party. Talking spider, and it was like, what the fuck? What's happening?
Oh, I didn't know there was a talking spider.
It's literally like if you let the movie. Like, you know, on Netflix.
You're all right. If you watch the movie without reading all the shit about it first.
No, like if you know how if you hover a movie on Netflix, it'll start playing like the trailer.
It didn't mention any spiders or
show. No, it shows it. But we just started the movie and then.
Oh, okay.
Then we were like, what the fuck? And so we backed out a little bit. And sure, it's a fucking talking spider. I don't know. Like, it's obviously going to be some sort of like mental struggle thing that he's having. And
that's what I'm getting at.
Blah, 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 blah. But it's pretty fun so far. I like it.
Adam Sandler, right?
Yeah.
Is it Sandler?
Sandler.
All these years later.
Sandler.
Okay.
Not Sandler. And it's a very serious role for him. Like, it's not played for comedy really at all. He's going through some pretty significant stuff in the film. But yeah, it's pretty good so far.
I'm kind of intrigued now.
It's a fucking... And it's a weird spider, too. He's got little curly fingers that he uses. It's weird.
And it's Paul Dano's voice?
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that for him. That's another one. He's got to go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But yeah, other than that, dude, Ronnie and I got fucking super sick last week.
Sick,
dude. So we were like literally like just surviving night to night. I was like, can we watch 20 minutes of something? Yeah, sure.
I'm surviving. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, something like that. Something like that.
And you're like, yeah, get out. I was sick 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, the week before, yeah.
Were you sick the entire fucking week?
I started feeling it like Saturday night, and it was basically, it was like 3 days of feeling like shit, and then I started feeling better, but then my head started fucking clogging up.
Yeah, that's what I had.
My cough started.
Did you have any diarrhea?
I mean, unrelated to the...
Oh, just no more than usual.
Yeah, no more or less than usual. That just comes with the territory.
Gotcha.
watery
stool.
Yeah, but I think Thursday, like I sort of hit the pinnacle of... or rather, like I felt 100%. Like I feel good.
You peaked.
I just sound like shit, which is cool.
You sound like shit right now?
Yeah.
No, I did. Nah. I sound like shit.
I'm the one.
No, I didn't even really notice. I didn't even notice till you mentioned
it. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Holy shit.
But yeah. We oh no. Okay, we did watch one other thing. Holy shit, bro. This Russell Crowe fucking...
The drone one?
The drone movie.
Oh!
Land of Bad.
Oh my God, bro. Okay, so it's not... Okay, so it isn't Russell Crowe enough for me to recommend it as like a kooky Russell Crowe movie.
Because he's a supporting dude in The Room, but just chill.
Yeah, right? So the conceit of it is that there's this group of elite soldiers with a JTAC operator with them who basically like does all the measurements and all that to get the drones to fire where they want. Well, long story short, everybody is like dead except for the JTAC guy, and Russell Crowe and him have to like work together to get him to safety. It's bonkers. Like there's like a small Filipino like village that they're bombing, and there's like underground caves and shit. So it's stupid as fuck.
Yeah.
But it never really gets there with Russell Crowe. Like he's got one. There's a scene where he's shopping for groceries, and it's like they're doing it in the middle of this really dramatic scene that's happening, and it's like okay, I can see where this could be fun, but it's just not. It's not worth the
squeeze,
the price of admission on that one.
Russell Crowe should not be the guy in the computer chair. That's not his thing.
Not. It's not.
He should only be in Pope's Exorcist.
It's just more
not the exorcism.
Yeah.
Just Pope's Exorcist all the time.
Hell, motherfucker.
Yeah.
What did Sophia think of that poster?
Oh, she walked downstairs, because she walked in and didn't notice it. She got home from work. Jacob's referring to a poster for the exorcism, not the Pope's Exorcist. I see people online. Anytime I see a post about this movie on these fucking message boards on Facebook, these horror, that's not a true horror movie. these people, they're like, is it a sequel to Pope's Exorcist? Is it a sequel? They're like incapable of ever reading any other comments that already asked this shit. But no, it's another horrible fucking movie, which Jake and I talked about on a previous episode.
Yeah,
and I highly recommend it because if you like bad movies, because it's fucking bad. But Jacob was kind enough to. They had plenty of posters left.
They had like hundreds in Mission Valley.
Shocker.
And it's a little one, you know, but I put it on the mirror next to when we walk in from the garage from parking and stuff. And she didn't even notice it. And I was like, whatever. Like, I wanted to like point it out.
But
I,
don't like, say it. You don't say anything.
I like ruining shit. I ruined shit, man. Like, I ruined fucking spoilers for Jacob already.
That's okay.
On Deadpool Wolverine. Like, I tried not to. But she walked downstairs. And then looked at the mirror and then fucking, like, audibly, like, was like, oh! And it's... And
she I'm made like, the face that Russell Crowe makes in the poster.
And she's like, honey, what is this? And I'm like, what do you think of his face? Oh! Because it looks like... He's just like, oh! Like he's fucking about to eat a fucking... A hoagie.
Oh, my God. You should have gotten, like, 20 of them and just plastered a whole wall.
I know. I asked the usher, like, can I get one of those posters? And he gives me a Quiet Place. He's like, no, not that one. I want that poster. Yeah.
That would be dope to have a whole room. Instead of, like, all your favorite movies, have all these shit movie posters.
Movies everywhere.
Not, like, cult classics either. Like, shit movies. Like bad ones like
that. Yeah. Stealth poster.
Yeah, Stealth.
Pope's Exorcist poster.
Pope's Exorcist.
Conjuring 3, Insidious 3.
Whoa! No, that's kind of fucked up.
Oh, shit. Uh-huh. In a violent nature poster.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's rough. You pissed somebody off. Dude, the kill on the cliff was dope.
Oh, dude, he does the thing. He turns her inside out, dude.
Dude, he does the thing, and she can't move to the left or the right. She can only move two directions in space.
Oh, man.
And she's so shocked she's on a cliff. Even though that's where she set up to do her fucking yoga.
Yeah. Jake, what about you? Did you watch anything?
I got this. This is like nerdy gamer shit, but I got this software called the Lossless Scaling, and it's like AI frame generation.
Yeah.
And what it does is increases and can double or triple your frame rate in any game by using AI to create frames in between. So it's like. Wait, what's crazy is not just for games. You can apply it to anything. So I was watching movies with it, basically watching them in high frame rate. But it's not like motion smoothing TV bullshit. Like, it's actually like really high quality frame generation. So I'm watching all these movies, and movies are in 24 frames a second, watching them in 48 frames. So I rewatched Uncut Gems in 48 frames a second.
Whoa!
I took some edibles. So go figure my thought process on that. But I watched that and then I rewatched Furiosa high frame rate.
Oh my god! How was Uncut Gems?
It was fucking trippy. Like the whole intro and the intro credits with it going inside the gem. And just seeing it in high frame rate was just super weird as fuck. But I could only handle like half of it because my eyes were kind of tripping me out. Yeah. I've seen the Hobbit movies in high frame rate in theaters, and that fucking made me super nauseous. It was really interesting, but not my go-to. So I was curious and watched movies like that. Courtney and I haven't seen it since I was a kid, and Courtney's never seen it. But before we saw Twisters in 4DX, we rewatched the original Twister.
Oh, yeah.
And I rewatched it. It was her first time. She loved it. We both loved it. I forgot how awesome some of the practical stunts were. And
yeah, like when they drive through a, like we
the
did
house,
a,
yeah.
We did a, Sophia and I did a rewatch a month or so ago, and I forgot to mention on the show. Yeah, same. Because I was just like, okay, it's going to be 97 CGI. I remember being corny when I was 15 seeing it, but still enjoying it.
Yeah.
And then being at the time blown away by the CGI cow.
Yeah.
Which is, like, not working the same now.
Yeah, like, none of the CGI obviously lives up
at all. But the practical
is incredible, and that's something that did lack a little bit in the new one. So after Twister, we watched Twister's 40X.
Wow.
And I was really unsure going in, you know, with some of the reviews being not like it's super spectacular, but I did start seeing reviews that 4DX was like the way to watch it. So we're glad we secured tickets for that. And holy shit, before we went in, there's a theater rep that said, like, please hold on to your belongings. You know, be careful when eating popcorn and your drinks, because, like, the settings for all these 4DX for Twisters has been set up to the highest that's ever been before in 4DX history or whatever. And I will say, having been to at least, like, five or six other 4DX showings, like, it was the most turned up it's ever been. Like, I was almost launched out of my fucking seat, like, literally, like, floating out of my seat, just jumping out of it. And people were popcorn flying, and when it rains on with Glenn Powell, and he's with his white wet T-shirt, it started like spraying water on your chest in theaters.
Did it make you come,
dude? It was. I was getting like pegged in the ass by Glenn Powell for 2 hours. Yeah, dude. And
that's what it should be. When he comes out with the shirt, it should be like putting shit in your ass.
It's honestly, you know what I mean? That's how it was. I think for the whole theater, it was fun. Like the theater was like fucking crazy wild. Like just having a blast. And. And, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, you, well, segue into you with your experience with Twisters, because you saw it, too.
I saw it, too, but not 40X.
So yeah,
like,
but, like...
it's like I didn't see it, basically.
There's a scene where you're just like the original, you're in a it's fucking like I saw tornado.
A version with no sound, black and white, basically, compared to that.
40X. Yeah, the, pegged the scene when they're 40X. When they're in a fucking Twister... Mm-hmm. Fucking the theater was like rumbling, like everyone was just shaking.
That's fucking pretty cool for that.
Yeah,
that for a disaster film like that, all this elemental stuff.
It's really fucking like the technology for 4DX is way better than I ever thought it could do. Like seeing the small nuances with the vibrations, the seat movement,
yeah.
And it's way more accurate. It doesn't feel like it's just kind of just moving you around. Like it is like pinpoint accuracy to every like sound beat.
What the hell is the difference between? Okay, 4DX is with all the extra bullshit, right? Yeah. Right. What's RPX?
RPX is basically just Regal's version of Dolby minus recliners. Mm. It's got like 54 channel surround sound or something crazy.
That's trash.
The seats are not the good at all, but it's got high quality sound. Okay. And that's it.
Yeah, it's their attempt to have their own like. Pay more for these seats.
Regal has a lot of that. They got the ScreenX, the IMAX, the RPX, the 4DX.
Jesus.
It's crazy. See, have you heard of ScreenX?
No.
It's the one where it's...
I don't go to fucking Regal.
It's three screens. What? So they kind of like take the edges and I think either stretch it out or use like AI or something to like fill in the sides so you get like a full panoramic
of
the whole movie. It doesn't like stretch it out like too much on the sides. I think it actually like generates images.
You know who wouldn't like that? Christopher Nolan.
No, you
like,
wouldn't.
Don't
yeah.
fuck with my.
I think, or like they
all pissed off.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously, yeah. I think they actually have like CGI artists add extra CGI on the edges of the screens. That's like, so they have engineers. Yeah, they have people in post production already working on the ScreenX format. But yeah, it adds extra images on the side.
As for Twisters, yeah, man. On the run up to it, like I was surprised to learn, of course, that it was the director of fucking Minari, which is a beautiful
film. It's a phenomenal film.
You liked it too?
Mm-hmm.
Did you see it?
Yeah, loved it.
God damn! Minari, The Exorcist. No, I'm just kidding. wrong fucking show.
Wow.
No, just totally different types of movies. No shit. But the first 30 minutes of the movie, though, I was in trouble. I was like, okay, cool, I'm glad they got this guy, but does it fucking matter? Because not so far. But they did have a good intro. They got
that little laugh.
They got it, because Twister had the intro of Helen Hunt's dad and encountering the F5. And so Daisy Edgar Jones, who, by the way, as soon as I saw her in Fresh, like, very charismatic actress, and I'm glad that she's blowing up, you know. And she's got that I don't like saying girl next door, but she's not like a fucking glamour goddess, you know. She seems very accessible and down to earth, like someone you could talk to.
Yeah,
you know, she's got that quality about her, and she does great in this. But they do have that good intro. The thing is, like, I'm always thinking about with Twister movies. Like, freaking the shrapnel. The shrapnel is really what's going to fucking get you.
No one gets hit by any shrapnel, I don't think, right?
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Even in the first one, it's just... they did more... Like, the CGI in this is pretty clean.
Yeah.
And it was a fucking admirable mixture of CGI and practical effects. Like some of the sets, like the decimated fucking little city, you could see its practical set with some CGI blended pretty fucking seamlessly, mm-hmm. which was great. But I mean, I'm reading, when you read about tornadoes, like the velocity can shove a fucking piece of hay through a telephone pole. Like,
yeah.
Show me some shit.
It could, I mean, you could make an R-rated, like, Twister movie.
Oh, you could do David Cronenberg's
Twister. Yeah, you could
where
do
it's all just shrapnel.
Yeah.
Just people getting...
Yeah, and I'm not saying they should be R-rated, but it's just like the... suspension of disbelief. Even right out of the... I know things go... it's the intro and things go where it goes anyway, but I feel almost there was a harsher, stronger way to do that intro, and they didn't really... Like, people got hit with stuff, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, but the first 30 minutes after that, just like the first Twister, it goes to that really silly tone and that goofy dialogue and all that stuff. And I was like, I'm in trouble here. I don't know if I can do this. And then, thankfully, of course, the character development kicks in. And about 40 minutes on is when it really, to me, finds its footing. And then Glenn Powell and Daisy Edgar Jones, they fucking... They don't just make the dialogue acceptable. They make it pretty fucking work really well. Their chemistry is great. They're both not just... It's not like they're both just good looking and he's very good looking. But he's very charismatic. he's very charismatic and he fucking has more than one facial expression.
He's really well media trained.
Yeah. Is that what they call it? No. That's what Once it gets to a... They go to a rodeo and that from the rodeo onward, the movie's pretty fucking tight.
Yeah,
tightly structured, and then in the midsection, it gets more romantic than I was anticipating, which is you could feel it in the theater. The ladies are loving this fucking movie.
Yeah,
And
which is such a huge trope with like romance novels, the city girl and the country boy.
Absolutely, yeah. And it leans into that, but then it subverts it in very subtle ways. Like we're waiting for the big kiss when you know. They set this team up to be the bad guys, and then it's like, no, this is the fucking group of eccentrics that she needs to be with. So I like all that shit.
Mm-hmm.
So all in all, I mean, despite all that, I know that sounds like really positive, but I was thinking it was going to be... I didn't understand the movie's reason to exist.
Yeah.
But I'd say it's like a 3 or 3.5 out of 5. Probably more like a 3.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
But it goes very, you know, much better than I anticipated a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
What'd you think?
Yeah, I enjoyed it, but like the comments, like, oh, it's the most fun since like Top Gun Maverick. No, nothing like that.
Just fucking chill out.
Yeah. I know, because Tom Cruise was at the premiere, and I guess he was freaking the fuck out. He loved the movie.
Well, and I guess, what's his name? The guy who directed that did this. He's the story credit here.
So oh, he that's
involved.
Why.
Yeah, I think so. Okay. He was involved with the making of it.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I think he had some good conceptual ideas about how to make this work.
Yeah. If M. Night Shyamalan directed Twisters, what would the twist be?
The twister, that it would be from the Twister's perspective. Stupid. And the people...
Yeah.
Are the ones.
People are the actual like bad guys?
Yes, because of climate change.
Climate change. And
it would basically be like a sequel to The Happening.
Fuck.
But with twisters.
But with twisters, and the people are basically a virus that needs to be eradicated.
Oh shit.
Which is true. So actually I'm kind of liking this idea.
Yeah, don't give that to him, man. Like
no, and they did, you know what, too, cuz this is, you know, indie film director goes big.
Yeah.
Right? He did some cool shit with time lapse.
Some like satellite photography. Yeah. Even if it's CGI, it looked fucking dope.
It looked dope, and it really added to like the fucking elemental like, and that's not like new school shit. It's just like, hey, let's use this in this context.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, a lot of science. You said they talk a lot about moisture.
They talk a lot about moisture, and it's like, okay, I get it. You want everyone to be moist. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they don't. They do talk a lot about moisture. It's a very sciencey movie and a very sexy movie.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a little bit, a tad bit more science. Because in Twister, they were just name-dropping technical terms without any explanation. It's a Vegeta 5.
It's fucking silly.
Yeah.
Well, and also, like, the big takeaway for me on the Twister rewatch, the original, besides that it's Jan de Bont, of course, was fucking Philip Seymour Hoffman as the stoner dude.
He's fucking fantastic. He's great in that film.
He's just fucking great.
Yeah.
Like his timing He's like, oh, I got a shit line and a stock character. I'm going to make it sing. And he does.
Yeah.
And then, but Bill Paxton as a leading man is so fucking jarring to me. I liked his character, The Extreme.
Yeah, it was it was interesting seeing him as a leading man. Like, the chemistry's good, but I don't know. You just see too much of his character afterness.
He's just inherently funny to me, how he delivers lines. He's like, yeah, what are you talking about?
Yeah, he's not a, he's not a good leading man, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was kind of, it doesn't ruin the movie, but I'm like, you know, I noticed they didn't really go this route again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just hear, like, is it True Lies?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just hear the True Lies guy. Yeah.
That's what I mean, because it's Bill, it's so Paxton. Yeah. You know, rip, rest in peace to Paxton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Best role as the captain dude in Titanic. Psych! He's in a lot of James Cameron movies, though.
He is.
What else, Jacob? What else you watch, man?
That was it, man.
Okay. I had watched it last time I was here. 13th Warrior. Did a rewatch.
Oh, yeah.
Sophia hadn't seen it. Dude, and I'm not going to take a long time, but we know this. This was a big flop when it came out. But, god damn, I don't know if you know that. This was like a very expensive film based on a book, Michael Crichton's Eaters of the Dead. But, dude, I'm reading these reviews, and they're like, for the most part, it's just Vikings doing Viking shit. And I'm like,
dumb.
Okay.
It's
so cool, like the tactical aspect of it, the fucking tactile aspect.
There's definitely like a grit to it, and like you said, the movie is like a little textured, and I love these Viking mercenaries. They all got like different, they're wearing like different sets of armor from different time periods, from places they raided.
Exactly, yeah. And one dude up in the tree is the surveillance guy, another's the archer, another's the tactician.
Even just him like learning the language is such a cool little.
That's a cool sequence.
It's just a great way to explain it. Like, you know.
Yeah.
That when I rewatched it for the first time in years, a couple years ago, I was so blown away by it. I watched it immediately afterward. I was like, that was so much fun.
And then you went through like 2 weeks of Viking movies.
Probably, knowing me.
Well, yeah. And it's fucking cool because you got that interplay between monotheism and fucking pagan and polytheism. And then you get there and they're like worshiping I forget what they're called already, but they're worshiping the Black Mother.
Yeah, the fertility god.
Yeah, all that interplay that's fucking going on, which is cool. And it's like, at first it's like, is this magical realism? And it's like, no, it's just basically hewing closer to realism because there's no fire. The fireworm is people with fucking torches.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
The fireworm is people, dude. Like, literally in our lives.
Oh, shit. And John McTiernan, man. I'm going to throw him a bone again.
It's fucking dope.
Yeah. Die Hard and Predator.
You see a lot of that Predator. You see that Predator in this.
Fuck, yeah. And Bullseye, dude, that guy is dope. Like, John McTiernan knows how to fucking do machismo stuff in, like, a really cool, like, well, duh, really cool way. But it's like, how do I explain it? It's not like some Michael Bay type deal. It's just like, no, that guy's fucking dope. Like, he puts his sword out to the fucking leader of the cult thing, and he just looks, it's like, I want a poster of that. I want that dude right there. But then, Bullseye versus Conan the Barbarian versus William Wallace versus Mad Mardigan versus Maximus versus Achilles to the death versus Leonidas.
You say who'd win?
Yeah, man.
Shit.
We need more rules. We need to know what weapons are available and what the things are. But yeah, this guy belongs. I know he's only in this one movie. You don't get to see too much of what he can do, but I think Bullseye needs to be added to that conversation.
Yeah.
He's a good fellow. And I throw in Spartacus for Tony Curtis.
There you go.
Okay. Well, if you haven't seen that, I'd recommend it. I think it's really underrated. If I had like my most 10 most underrated movies, I'd probably be on the list for me. Sophia and I went to L.A., the Egyptian Theater, the newly renovated one. Fucking Hollywood, no shit, is a mess. Like, Hollywood, the actual place, like, with the Star Walk. It's there next to the Walk of Stars. But this theater is beautiful. And we saw Vertigo.
That would be so fun.
It was. That's a hypnotic-ass fucking movie. And Bernard Herrmann's score fucking booming in that theater was just like, oh!
Yeah.
Beforehand, Jacob, they were saying what else they had coming up for this film festival. And they said, we've got the director's cuts of both Rebel Moons And this is a 1 p.m. Sunday showing of Vertigo that's near sold out.
Yeah.
But and then it's just dead quiet. And then the guy's like, any Zack Snyder fans in here? And then we all just laughed. It's just like, wrong fucking crowd, dude. Not at Vertigo at 1 p.m. on a Sunday, dude.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It's like, wow, I can't believe they're doing that. It was great. And then, what else? I'll exclude that one. Dude, I have to be full disclosure. Heat, I had like mixed feelings with Heat because I believe the last time I tried to give it a full watch all the way through and only one of the only times because I had missed it growing up for whatever reason. I knew it existed, but I hadn't watched it till much later. I think it was like pre-sobriety and I obviously was not paying attention because that's a fuck 5-star movie.
It is.
And I, it's one of those where I feel embarrassed to be talking like I am. And also, Nolan ripped that shit for fucking The Dark Knight. Like, as far as the sequel. I mean, in a good way, but it's like, goddamn, the truck thing, the heist element.
How it's shot and looks and moves.
It's just like, dude, he's like, well, fucking Burton did his gothic fucking fantasy scape. I need to go a totally different direction. Let's do fucking Heat as a Batman movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's a lot of that in there. But that movie, the plotting, I remember like feeling like there was too many characters before, and why do we keep seeing the girlfriends? And then this time I'm like, dude, this is fucking intricate as fuck.
It's super like neo-noir.
Super neo-noir. Yeah. Beautifully, I mean, the Michael Mann thing on the heels of watching Manhunter too. This is like that on fucking steroids, but with all like the intricate plotting and character stuff that was only really hinted at with Manhunter. Because it's not. It's a much more simple film character-wise and plotting-wise, I think, generally. But, yeah, dude, that movie, that's freaking...
It set the bar so... Because Paul and I, we grew up watching that movie, and it's like any movie with a shootout, like, it just paled in comparison. It just set the bar way too high for so long.
Well, and then, like, what struck me in between... Because the broad majority of the movie, it plays like a... It's written like a drama, and then it has those moments. But then there's these scenes which are not action scenes, which are just great confrontations between people. And it does so much shit, too. Like, it has the driver, the black dude.
Mm-hmm.
It gives you just enough fucking, like, backstory about him and the restaurant being on probation.
The Allstate guy?
Yeah, to see how fucking... Exactly. That's what Sophia says. See how tragic that shit is.
Yeah.
Just fucking dead.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And a lot of that stuff. And then, like, the dude fucking is killing the prostitute chicks. And it's like, you know, they're not going to throw funding and a lot of a huge investigation at this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Coked out Pacino.
Coked out fucking Pacino. Great ass!
Always fun.
You got your head all the way up it.
Show me what you got.
And then Hank Azaria's face is just like
really? Really?
Like, really? You're going to let, like, Michael, you're going to keep him? Like, you need to let him do it again. But
yeah.
I saw a recent interview that was moderated by Christopher Nolan, by the way. He was talking to fucking Pacino and De Niro about Heat. Which was a trip. Mm-hmm. And Pacino said it was an understanding between him and Michael Mann that his character fucking did coke. But they didn't ever show it in the movie.
Yeah, they cut out all the scenes of him actually doing coke, I heard. At least that was the rumor.
Well, it makes a lot of fucking sense.
Yeah.
And that's on Paramount. If you have a Paramount subscription, you want to rewatch it and not pay for it.
Yeah, Michael Mann. Or watch it
for the first time.
He's coming back with Heat 2 because he wrote the novel, which is a prequel and a sequel. And now they got Adam Driver playing young De Niro. And I think Austin Butler playing young Val Kilmer.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that's what's happening with this Heat 2. I don't like the idea anyway. And
yeah, Michael Mann's returning, which, you know, after Ferrari and rewatching that crash scene like 30 times, dude. Have you seen it?
You showed it to me.
Yeah, okay.
And it's fucking ridiculous.
I don't know.
It's fucking Star Wars.
I don't think Michael Mann has it in him. He's, yeah.
Michael Mann and Martin Scorsese need to, just chill.
Yeah. Yeah. Scorsese's new Jesus movie.
No.
What is it called?
Andrew the Garfield?
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
No, thanks.
The fucking dude already... Never mind. He's already done this shit. Last Temptation of Christ.
Yeah.
Silence. Raging Bull has that shit. The thematic element of it. Mean Streets. It's just, you know. Can we move on?
We can move on.
Yes.
Okay.
Moving on.
That's it? What'd you watch?
already talked about it.
Oh, yeah. And that's it.
That's it.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back to talk about the long legs. Fucking A right, yikes.
Too much.
Bro. You know what else is too much?
Patreon.com/WhoGoesThere podcast, where you can become a member of the Patreon for your favorite all things horror podcast.
Well, and all things basically everything now.
All things things. And you get the episodes early. You get access to the Discord.
Yeah.
Jacob just took a bunch of inventory on a bunch of merch that we need to distribute to y'all prior to revamping and relaunching the merch store.
We're gonna go very socialist with this thing. We're just gonna redistribute the wealth.
Yeah.
Well, we could squeeze some cash out of it. No, I'm just kidding. But yes, squeezing cash, you can squeeze a dollar, three, five, ten, twenty. There's a dude known as Lord Hans, who pays $50 a month. $50. So think about what a burrito costs, like $14
fucking. God, dude, it's too much. It's too much.
Jesus.
I had one this morning. I was not happy with how much I paid.
Yeah, how much was it?
It was like $13.
What is that?
I went to hang out with some folks on Friday night, like post Comic Con shit, and we went to this bar. Well, actually, right next to Cherry Bomb. It's called, not right next to Cherry Bomb, but it's like in that same area called, forget it. Doesn't fucking matter. But they had a breakfast burrito on the menu, and I was like, oh, that sounds good. $18.99.
Was it
Nunu's? Nunu's! Yeah, that's right.
It's like, oh, it's a pizza. No, it's a breakfast burrito.
Yeah.
It's just a bar with a kitchen, and it's like overpriced as fuck.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it was good.
Yeah,
it is. But it's too much. It was fucking too much.
God damn.
Yeah. And speaking of too much, Homegirl is giving us too much money now. Thank you, Janelle Shambo, for upping your fucking pledge on Patreon.
Yeah, and we need to send her something special.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I'm working. I took the inventory. I'm going to start one tier at a time, start distributing some goodies to people.
Thanks,
and
man.
Then, again, all at once, just for the Christmas holiday stuff.
Christmas in September.
Something like that.
Yeah.
All right. Well, the Who Goes There podcast watched a little film called Long Legs from 2024, directed and written by Oz Perkins, starring Micah Monroe, who you would...
Is it Micah? I heard someone say that shit recently.
Micah or Micah?
I've been saying Micah.
Me too.
I'd say Micah. Nick Cage, Blair Underwood, who I think is like... I
hate that guy.
You hate him.
But he was... Well, we'll get there.
What show was he?
I don't hate him.
What show was he in the 90s?
He was in some show.
Was it Pacific? Was it something blue? He was like in that sexy cop show, wasn't he?
NYPD, and he has not aged.
NYPD Blue, is that what it was?
He's a beautiful man. What? Was it NYPD Blue? I don't know. I don't know, man.
Doesn't matter, right?
Let's get it going.
And there's a bunch of other people in this film, too. But the most important ones are Micah and Nick Cage.
And Lauren Acala. Just kidding. Young Lee Harker. The house. White as snow.
Jacob.
Oh, man. I didn't write like any notes for this movie. I just kind of, what the kids say, I raw dogged it.
Welcome to the Raw Dog Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Raw dogs.
I raw dogged this shit twice in theaters. I loved it. I think it rewards you with repeated viewings. And although it is not at all the movie I had in my head going in through all this crazy marketing and all the hype, it didn't deliver the movie I had hoped in my head, but it delivered something completely different that I appreciated completely. I mean, at this current moment, it's my number one horror film of the year. I think there's just a lot to take apart with it, and holy shit, I wouldn't even know where to start. Like, it's not overtly scary, but I would say that I haven't seen a movie that really got under my skin and just made me feel all sorts of fucking...
Since Under the Skin, dude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. No, I was so uncomfortable. I loved everything about it. The build-up of revealing long legs, and just fucking, there's just certain moments that are just so well edited and shot, and Oz Perkins just has this incredible eye for detail. And I wouldn't say the movie is and isn't kind of hand-holdy at its times. It kind of, there's a lot of divisiveness in the third act that we can go into, and whether you agree with what a lot of the audiences are saying about the third act. But overall, holy shit, I love this kind of slow burn, old school prog rock Satanist shit, and it's fucking, it's pretty out there, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
As aforementioned, the marketing campaign for this movie was one of the most effective in recent memory, for especially particularly for an indie film, an indie horror film. So effective that it got fucking it trolled general audiences into seeing what is a much stranger and even slower, I don't mean slower in a bad way though, film than what I was anticipating too. Yeah. Necessarily, I didn't know exactly what to anticipate because they showed you a lot of stuff but didn't tell you much with their trailers, which is great. It was very effective. It got piqued people's curiosity. And so, yeah, it had like a $21 million opening weekend or something, you know, which is great for this type of film. What it did deliver on, exactly what I expected wise, and even more so probably, is the atmosphere. Like, the atmosphere was the sustained tone the entire time. The first 30 or 40 minutes, I was adjusting to the movie moving at a pace that I was not prepared for. And then I realized, wait a minute, it's Oz Perkins. And, you know, considering the couple movies, the other movies he's done before, and I've seen one movie he's done before, Gretel and Hansel, it's like, that's what he is, a slow burn.
Good flick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like that too. And he's a slow burn type guy. And then, you know, the 40, 45 minute mark of a film is often a turning point. You know, it's that like...
Wait, you saw The Black Coat's Daughter though, didn't you?
I didn't see it.
And oh, what did you watch recently that was in that?
The Nightingale.
That's what it was. Yeah. Right.
Fucking amazing. But that's the Jennifer Kent lady who did Babadook, Jorge's favorite movie. But but has that delightful child. That's me, dude. No, this movie though, the third act. I was so happy where it went with the third act. I'm happy too. It went fucking off the rails bonkers, and I actually, and I have seen it once and have been like chomping at the bit to see it another time.
Check it again.
Because I definitely believe I'll enjoy it the second time knowing what to expect. And it has a lot of, there is some ambiguity, which I'm totally fucking fine with.
Yeah.
I had a long talk online with Matt, previous host and co-founder of this show, and unsurprisingly, the ambiguity pissed him off.
Shocker.
Well, and it, you know, but that's, you know, a lot of horror is, here it goes, the interplay between the ambiguous and the inevitable. And this movie has that going on.
Wow, that's very eloquent.
Thanks. Well, it's true. And he got me to it, man, you know? You know? Oh. Well, the unknown is scary, right? But
the dude, there's the difference between the unknown knowns and the known unknowns and the unknown unknowns, dude.
That's definitely true.
Whoa. Yeah,
because they're different words. But this has a lot of fucking stuff where there are scenes where it exudes just a feeling of genuine unease. Like one in particular, I know we'll go into specifics, but one thing, it shouldn't be a scary scene, but when he's talking to one of the victims who's at the mental institute, the girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that scene and is she's just
great
like,
in that scene, by the way. Holy.
Yeah, I just don't understand how they did that. Like, the writing the scene's one thing, executing is another, the lighting.
And in one take.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
It's just like,
and she's damn near unrecognizable in that role, too, which is, like, super weird for me.
Yeah. And it does one of those things, too, which is one of my favorite things, because it's something near and dear to my heart. No, but it's that ambiguity and interplay between mental illness and the occult, and not knowing, like, a chicken or the egg type thing, because it's not one or the other. It's both. What caused what, and what's going on here? And either way, it's bad news. Right, it's this entirely different perception of reality going on that starts to infect everything around it. So I loved all that stuff. I loved the thematic stuff. There's some imagery even like the little fucking doll hand with like a metal sphere mm-hmm. by itself, and this stuff sticks with you. There's so many details in this where even upon driving home, I realized it was even it was better put together than I thought while driving home. Like also the mom's got her like fingernails and hair in a little box and all that stuff. They used the crew, by the way, donated their actual fingernails and hair.
Oh wow!
For that scene, which is a cool little detail.
Little bits box.
Yeah, and this stuff that it doesn't say overtly about mind control, about like. Astral projection, remote viewing, like all this stuff that would be in play. There's a metaphysics implied here that doesn't get explained, and that pisses people off, I think.
I think it does.
Yes. I think it does, but it becomes.
Which is completely silly.
Because they're showing you.
Of this movie.
Yeah, because they're showing. Like when he's talking to the doll, like I'm driving home and thinking about this scene where he's talking to the doll, you're not afraid of a little dark, you are the dark. He's talking to the fucking. In his mind, Satan. Which he's putting into the doll, like in the framework of a mirrored image.
I think
of the child it's linked yeah. with.
I'm gonna make it very short here because I kind of want to. I want to tail on to what like literally you just said. So I love this film.
Yeah.
I think like ruminating on it over the last week has like kind of made me more enthusiastic about how I like it, just right. because. And I've said it before, I really have a dislike for films that deal with, like, just, you know, when we're talking about evil, when it's, like, Christianity. I just, I'm so fucking, like, I'm so over Christianity as, like, the bad guy, so to speak. And I don't mean Christianity as like it's the church.
The theology.
But like the theology of it, the devil and God and Jesus and all this stuff. I'm over it. I'm over it. Pero I think this movie does a really cool thing where I think they've tapped into something that's even worse than what the devil would be, quote unquote, right? They call it the devil and they call it Satan, but I think it's like it's layers even further than that. They've tapped into something that is darker and more evil and more powerful than the devil could supposedly be.
Absolutely.
I like the framing of the Christianity stuff as like the big bad, but I do, like you said, there's something that I think there's something like almost Cthulhu-like just hovering.
Cosmic beneath. Horde.
Like it goes further. Like I think it goes further than just like, okay, it's the devil and he's bad.
No, that's what he believes, right? But it's about belief too. It's what people believe in.
I think he's like accidentally like reached the biggest bad.
because it doesn't matter what name you're using.
Yeah.
It's the metaphysic. There's a it assumes this technical reality of how things work with energy and the psyche.
Yeah.
And he believes it's satanic, and it's like, cool, that'll work. And so
that's good. Yeah, cool. We got you.
That'll work. You know why? Because a lot of people believe in that. So I'm coming in.
Yeah.
Right.
So the metaphysical stuff is really cool to me. I think that I think almost universally, I think everybody did a fantastic job in this film.
Yep.
From acting to cinema, or the cinematography to just like holding shots long enough to where you feel like, okay, that's enough and perfect. Like, just everything. And I know there's people that are saying like, oh, it's like the trailers and the this and the that and the marketing. I'm like, bro, fucking who cares? Who cares?
Well, especially because that stuff matters until the movie comes out, and then for the rest of time, which our time is probably short. No, I'm just kidding. For the rest of time, what we have is the movie to go off of.
Yeah.
Right. So its goal was to get as many people interested in this film as possible, and it did that. You know?
The Silence of the Lambs comparison, you know, the directors come out many times saying, like, this was just, like, he didn't meant for everyone to, like, latch on to that, but it was kind of like the entry point. He's holding your hand to the beginning saying, hey, this is, like, the familiar territory. And then after that, completely crazy, strange, original, you know, ideas.
Well, and there's so many ideas, right? So many that I'm at a loss about which one to go into. But when you mentioned Silence of the Lambs, right? Like they, before going on to this next part, they said it's the best serial killer film since Silence of the Lambs. And then some people say Seven and this and that. This is a very different film than either one of those. And Seven was very different than Silence of the Lambs. Mm-hmm. Another thing that this, like, and it goes with what Jorge was saying, the Christianity and theological aspect is important for this film thematically to me, because it also has this thing of, one of the questions Matt was asking me is like, I didn't understand why the guys are killing their families or their kids. And I'm like, well, Matt, that occurs. That's why, because that actually happens. Why do they do that? And so it's kind of like exposing this rotten core of the nuclear family, right? You get what I'm saying? And then what is the nuclear family and the idea of that in the Western civilization based around? A lot of it's based around this Christian mythos and theology. And her mom is like a nun, right? Or not a nun, but...
She's like a pastor, basically.
She's a pastor, yeah. and she's trying to convert people, and then so she's going around under the guise of being a righteous person to find victims for this fucking dude so she could spare her own loved ones.
Yeah, right? It has a lot to do with protecting children and those lies and the damage it could do.
That thing, too, the narratives you have. Oz Perkins talked about in an interview, like his dad, Anthony Perkins, fucking Norman Bates, and his mom... He didn't say the specific situation, but he said that there was things that they protected him from until he was older. And once he found out the truth, he was very upset and very angry. And he said that was really the genesis for this movie, was about the narratives we tell children and people to protect them from the truth, you know. And so that goes with all this other broader thematic stuff, you know, like how much of that is going on all the fucking time. As far as the serial killer thing, too, there's a point where they mention fucking Manson. They bring up Charles Manson, but they said the closest thing would be Manson, but that guy had a whole group of people around him.
Yeah.
But having just listened to that audiobook, which is a great fucking audiobook.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that. Yep.
Yeah, that Chaos, it's called Chaos, and it's about the CIA and Manson in the 60s. And it's not a conspiratorial book. The guy fucking spent... It's a great fucking book. And it's supposed to be being adapted to a streaming docuseries. It's just amazing. But yeah, there is a strong interplay between like, how does this work? How does someone get someone to perform these acts that they would never fucking do? What does he do? What does an individual do? What mechanisms are in play in their psyche where they can completely shift people to become brutal fucking murderers? And do all people have these propensities? Right.
And it explores the idea that we all have the capacity to do it. Right.
Exactly. Because you have the same internal structures and mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so there's a lot of
it's unlocking something. It's right. It's not that it was never there, but it's stuff that we as humans have like suppressed because killing people wantonly is something that we shouldn't do.
Right.
But it's there. It's like you could. You have the literal like capacity to do it.
You have the capacity, and at a certain point, you have an
the compulsion.
You have the compulsion to, as evidenced by look at the world.
Well, and also like this, our minds are no stranger to that sort of thing at all. Like when you talk about what's the thing? You'll know instantly when I'm talking about it. When you want to, like, when you're driving and you feel like the urge to fucking...
Yeah, there's a technical
term. Call of the void, right?
The call of the void.
Yeah.
And that's there. That call of the void thing that Jorge's... we talked to about that on the show many, like, 3 or 4 years ago, it feels like now. But that's there as a supposedly, according to the scientific understanding of it, as an evolutionary advantage that it's part of being a human where you're able to consider worst-case scenarios. It's like a reminder to keep yourself alive. It's basically the survival instinct. So you're driving in a car and you imagine, what if I just drove off this fucking cliff right now and fucking died? And that sounds like a horrible thing, but it's a very common thing.
Yeah.
They've termed Call of the Void, and it's there for you to just imagine.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, focus, don't drive off the road.
Yeah. Well, the craziest stuff is like you have people that are driving around with like their car full of kids.
Yeah.
And it's that same thing, and people have fallen victim to the fucking call of the void, dude. Like you're at La Jolla Shores and you're like, "Hey, what if I just jump off the fucking cliff right now?"
Right.
What would happen?
Yeah.
Would I die?
Yeah.
Would it be cool, dude? You know?
Well, and I mean, shit, that's how a lot of things get discovered, too, by the way. I mean, we didn't have bungee jumping for no fucking reason.
Yeah, right.
Or skydiving. People, this all came from a very primal place, which is great. What? No, but talking about, like, just the film stuff, too, Micah Monroe, like, Nicolas Cage has a blast in this fucking movie. I'm sure we'll get there with that. And his prosthetics. The best prosthetics since Bradley Cooper in playing Bernstein. I'm
just kidding. I thought you were going to say fucking...
to get an Oscar.
I thought you were going to say as Rocket Raccoon.
No, I'll come back. She is... I've liked her like since seeing her in It Follows and The Guest. Yeah. She's always been kind of an underrated, I don't want to say scream queen, but she's in that wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. And she was in that one 2 or 3 years ago. She's in France. A guy's stalking her.
Yeah.
Watcher. Yeah. Well, and she was good in that. She's fantastic in this fucking movie.
Yeah.
Her entire demeanor, like her facial expression, she has to carry the whole film. A lot of it she has to carry.
She was an Independence Day resurgence.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Roland Emmerich tried to ruin her career.
Never mind. We'll forget that one.
Yeah. Holy shit. She's just great in this. Yeah. I thought she was fantastic.
She does such a good job of towing the line between being super and incredibly mopey the entire film, and instead brings a really, really gigantic power to the suffering that she's like experiencing. Literally every minute she's awake.
Yeah, she's not having a good time.
She's never having a good time. Like whether it's like, oh, she cracked a case because she found this fucking serial killer, but like, it's at the expense of her partner dying, and she's now, you know, if you kind of rewind it, her life up to the point of that doll being killed has been filled with just like fucking mindless information getting shoved into her head.
Yeah.
When
she goes to the house of Blair Underwood for the first time, who's her partner,
yep, right?
In this film. And she doesn't want to meet the family. She's very, 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 very much I told Matt, you just don't like autistic horror. Like, no, because she's very much like an interior person, and she's got borderline, as far as we can tell, clairvoyant or psychic abilities, empath type stuff, which goes with the rest of the thematic stuff in here. And it's not revealed overtly at first. It's suggested. It is kind of overt in some of the dialogue, actually. But anyway, she does not want to go in there and meet the family because she's just uncomfortable, very socially awkward, because she's uncomfortable already.
It's either she's either just uncomfortable meeting people, or
she's like, intuiting there's something else going on.
Yeah, she doesn't want to meet people because, like, she's, well, it's, here we go again, more fucking intrusive shit coming in,
right,
that I have no control over.
And I think maybe some part of her might intuit, because she doesn't have all the information yet, but she might be picking up, anyone I involve with my shit is gonna get hurt.
Yeah.
Right? So she naturally wants to keep people away from her.
I was a little surprised that Blair Underwood, Carter, Agent Carter or whatever, he didn't realize his daughter's birthday is like the same birthday as all the victims. That never clicked for him.
Well, he was still. Well, he's skeptical. He's Scully. Skeptical.
Yeah, skeptical? He was a skeptic.
Skeptical. Yeah, he's going with her helping out is because it produced a result.
Yeah,
he's like, yeah, a little bit psych is better than nothing.
I did see a lot of people do make a comparison. It does kind of feel like X-Files kind of episode with.
Yeah, it feels like an X-Files type deal, except.
Better.
A thousand times more atmospheric. Yeah. Like a thousand. Crank up the atmosphere to 1,000.
That's dope.
And don't have Mulder make dumbass jokes.
That's fucking crazy.
You mentioned something that.
Yeah.
And
you're like, yeah.
We said, Sophia said that too when we left. Like, we talked about the X-Files thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a pretty apt comparison.
I was talking to my brother at a barbecue, and he mentioned something that I've never heard of before. Then you mentioned it when we briefly talked about it. I think off air last recording, but remote viewing,
mm-hmm,
and they kind of touch on that in this movie. Not enough, but it made me.
Well, it's enough because
I mean, I wish it was explored more because it was really fucking interesting.
Yeah,
yeah, and I didn't know anything about this, and it's like a whole Project Stargate. I read like 20 pages of the CIA booklet, and I watched a documentary. I watched Russell Targ's banned TED Talk on remote viewing.
What?
Yeah, I got banned off TED Talk for being like a fake science. But he did like...
Oh, got banned for that. Yeah. They've never... Yes, anything else can... Yeah,
right. Dude, okay. Who was... It's on TED Talk. Russell Targ, the forefront of remote viewing.
Who was the guy who used to go on Art Bell all the time to talk about...
It was him, and then it was Russell Targ, but it was another guy, yeah.
Yeah, and look, I know there... Look, are there snake oil salesmen for things? Yes, probably. But, dude, like, seriously, they've thrown a lot of research and development at this stuff, legitimately.
The whole random number generator scene, I was like, holy shit, this movie is really doing something different.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm glad maybe the first 20 minutes, it feels like familiar territory, the Silence of the Lambs shit. And then, like, the moment she feels like she gets that tap on her shoulder, which kind of, I feel like that's kind of... Has she not really had as much free will as she thought all the way up until the point of her doll?
I think a lot of what's going on is she's being sort of spiderwebbed into this situation.
Yeah, I feel like she's been directed by this entity her whole life to the tapping on the shoulder.
Well, it's obvious, but also pretty subtle at the same time. Like, as you're watching the movie, you can see in the background, and this film does such a fucking great job.
Oh yeah, we didn't even talk about that.
This movie does such a great job of like holding us. Like, and when I was talking about holding a scene until it's like, okay, now I'm good. This is perfect.
Yeah.
When you're looking at the background and you're like, okay, there's got to be something there, and then there is, and it's fucking cool. It's like, damn, man, like this dude knows what he's fucking doing.
So like in a violent nature.
No.
Oh.
So you see these glimpses of like a prototypical like demon devil type deal, which I think is probably mostly like her kind projection. Of like her projection of the thing.
Yeah, that's the theology, you know.
But it's so fucking cool because you'll see it in one scene and then they'll do it a couple more times where they'll show the background and you're expecting to see something, but nothing happens. And so it kind of like keeps the rhythm off. It's like kind of like playing like, you know, like weird time signature music.
It's not grooving.
It's not grooving, man.
It's like it knows how to groove and it knows what you want and then it doesn't do it.
And then
it takes longer.
And then it doesn't fuck you right. And you're like, ah, damn, man. Yeah. But then it gives you the juice.
Yeah.
That scene where she's outside of her house and then you see long legs inside of the in the window, I think is so fucking cool because you're expecting a supernatural thing to happen and then it's just fucking Nicolas Cage in her fucking house, dude. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah, the movie gets under my skin and I think people kind of missed a lot of like the scary things, like the idea of something kind of controlling her fate when she was a child ever since that doll was put in her house.
Absolutely.
Or the idea of, you know, we're getting to spoilers here, of fucking long legs living underneath her home the entire time.
Oh, people under the stairs, dude.
People don't, I don't
the realize, man downstairs.
Yeah, people don't understand, like, how fucking terrifying that is, you know, in reality.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. A lot of people just felt like, oh, it's not scary. It's whatever.
I'm well,
like,
it's well, so funny.
It's jump scare.
It's so funny because it ends up like the idea of the man downstairs. It's like, oh, dude, like cosmically, that makes a lot of sense. No, it's literally the guy under the stairs.
Yeah,
it's like,
yeah, because again, there's this. It's great. Right. Exactly. Because it subverts that too. But then it's also there's this whole like binary opposition, right? Is it literal or is it figurative?
Mm-hmm.
It's neither.
Nah, bitch, it's both.
It's both. He's also under the stairs.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like, well, why? Because where else would he be? He's under the stairs, right?
He's got to live somewhere.
Yeah, in both cases, that's why we have the symbolism like that.
There's a lot of that dialogue.
Of the beneath.
Because it wouldn't be as cool if it was like the guy in the next room.
Right. Well, and that's where it starts to, you could go now, like, shift over to, like, the symbolism stuff. You got the inverted triangle constantly, which is the idea energetically of that is instead of the energy is directed downwards, right, as opposed to upwards.
The number generators.
Yeah.
There's a picture of a circle. You said mother, and there's an inverted triangle.
She says father.
Oh, yeah. Dude, right? Inverted triangle, dude!
Which I'm not saying, that's deep, but it's like... It's not that it's dude, it's fucked up. No, but it's not
that.
That's
what I'm saying, when they were talking about that shit, and I was like, oh shit.
Yeah, well, and also when she does that scene, it's like Blade Runner 2049. You know what I mean? Where they're doing like the freaking cells within cells,
yeah,
and Clockwork Orange type deal. But
that's doing it to the audience too, because it's like the movie starts shifting there where I'm like, and it's so subtle that you're like, is this happening or not? Like, is this happening? And then before you know it, you're like in like bad vibes land. You're like in total bad vibes. And then by the time, again, when it gets to that fucking chick and the thing, I'm like, I'm fucking completely mind fucked now.
Yeah.
You know? And then like, I don't want to spiral out to that part right now, but the other symbolism, like when I talk about the family system, like these guys, these cases where guys do kill their children and their wives and all of that stuff, you know, like it's a horrific thing that happens. And like in the context of this movie, like, and like you said, she sees the inverted triangle and says, dad, well, where is her dad? Mm-hmm. Where is the father?
Yeah.
They don't even mention him.
Yeah, it's actually, now that you're mentioning it, right, it's always the father figure, right, that does the murders.
In this thing.
This
pattern.
So it kind of like...
This ritual.
It lends like either like men are more susceptible to the weakness that causes, like, you know, this thing to click over and click over and click over and click over. And
that's what I mean. Oz is smart. Like, it's true. It's not just the movie. That's obviously true. Yeah. That's what happens.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's an interesting exploration of toxic masculinity if you wanted to go down that path.
Or just like bile. It's like if you got the X and Y chromosome, you're more susceptible. Like, you know, if you got the double X, you're less susceptible. Like, it's fucking, I'm sorry, because I'm learning a bit, like, in biology, like there's certain things that you'd only get from one of the chromosomes.
Yeah, well, like, from a biological standpoint, like, I know, like, biologically, men are more capable of physical violence in terms of, like, our biology, right?
Absolutely.
So, of course, this thing is going to latch onto us.
Yeah, it's a better entry point.
It's a better entry point. It's easier because, like, we're just this side of being fucking hunters.
Yeah.
Like, you know, our nature is to hunt.
We don't create the child.
Yeah. Neither do we nurture it as well. Like, that's the flip side of this whole thing is that, like, well, we're
terrible. Like, all that shit's in there.
Yeah, that's in there, man.
That's dope.
I'm not as good of a, and it's proven in my day-to-day life, like, I'm not as good of a caretaker as my wife is, like, just because, like, that's how we built our family, first off.
I know there are people listening that'll say, of course, it's not just exceptions.
It's not binary, of course.
No, but... Well, you're talking about the physical reality of those things. Like, I have mammary glands, but they don't produce milk, right? That would help.
Yeah.
There's no reason for these. And it's because I'm an incomplete female. That's basically what it is. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, you've been stripped.
We're missing chromosomes.
Stripped away the cool parts of your life by being able to fucking make milk.
Well, I only make one type of milk, dude.
Oh, milk!
No, wait. Why do you think it's called long legs? Matt was worried about that too.
Oh, fuck off, man! Because
no, I'm just bringing
it up because because he's an adult and he's targeting children. Like, literally, that's it.
Yeah, and even me, I'm like, it's like,
come on.
Word association too. Like, what is long? It's the common house spider. Like, it's you know what I mean? Like, it's so, and it's like, oh well. Should I have to have a psychology degree? Like, no, but it's that movie. The movie is, like, about associative stuff.
On top of that, it could have been literally anything. Like, clowns have big noses. Fucking, like... Yeah. It could be anything. Yeah, I don't think long legs... I don't think he chose it because it's like, oh, I have long legs.
He chose it and didn't tell you why because you could, like, put a bunch of shit you wanted to in it. Like, he knows that's how it works.
Yeah.
Well, and then, like... At the beginning, he says, I've got my long legs on today.
As opposed to his short legs, which would be hilarious.
Well, and also to me, I'm thinking, not knowing, like, does that mean, because a lot of time he's acting through other people. Does this mean today I've got my long legs on, as in, like, I'm
here. I'm a different dude.
I'm here in person with my own legs going to do some work today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
As opposed to going through, like, the doll or the children.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'm using my vessel to move. Like any
damn fuck. I like it.
Should we?
Because you wouldn't put that in the dialogue for no fucking reason at the beginning.
Or he could have.
Yeah,
I mean that's
or he could have.
That's also okay.
Fucking great.
Either way, it's dope.
Yeah.
Should we focus a little bit on Nick Cage, his character.
We haven't talked about it at all, which I think is super, super, super indicative of how little, not that it matters, but how little, like, the stuff that Nicolas Cage does, while is incredible, I think there's so much, like, brilliance going on that you're like, oh, dude, and Nicolas Cage
is
awesome.
It's a generous fucking movie.
It's fucking great, right. Dude. Yeah. Like, we haven't even touched on Nicolas Cage doing Nicolas Cage the most.
Absolutely. Yeah. Doing fucking...
It's, a very effective opening. I think how they teased him in the beginning was fucking great. The intro credits, the editing, the aspect ratio.
The half face.
Yep.
No, it's incredible. And I love, just the slow build up and flashbacks to his character and finally getting the final reveal. And I read online that the makeup artist, Oz Perkins, gave him the notes that, like, his character went through fucked up botched plastic surgeries on purpose.
Perfect.
In an attempt to make himself pretty for the devil.
It actually makes more sense to me.
It's perfect. Yeah. It's perfect. Because he does have that face when people have done too much plastic surgery.
Yeah.
The really fucking high fucking cheek and the thing and the
and his obsession with, like, glam rock, like Mark Bolan
and T-Rex. T-Rex.
T-Rex.
Yeah.
Trex, dude.
Yeah. Trex.
Bing a gong, dude. Is it Trex?
No, it's T-Rex.
Oh, I was like, holy shit.
No, well, it's for, what's
Baby
the...
Baby Driver?
No, is it Baby Driver? Where he
calls
he,
it Trex?
Yeah.
Well, who's the Jeremy Johns, that other reviewer on YouTube?
Yeah. He's actually pretty good. I like his reviews better.
Much better than fucking Stuckass.
Well, Stuckass, yes. But I think he's my... I think when I actually want to know if a movie's, like, palatable, he's my first stop.
Yeah, and it's not like I never disagree with... Like, this one, he was complaining about the prosthetics, not knowing that context. It's supposed to look like botched jobs.
Yeah.
And it is, you know? So it's not supposed to look like this is his natural face from aging.
Yeah. Dude, it was unsettling, man. The whole interrogation scene, first on the TV, and him singing Happy Birthday... And him saying, "And you'll be there, and you'll be there." The people that end up dying in the movie, Agent Carter, and
he's looking at him, which is amazing,
so
man.
Creepy.
It's fucking wild. Like I think people that are upset by, like, the subtlety and the slowness of this movie just weren't watching the movie. They're looking for shit
so many
to be upset about.
It feels like it's slow, and it turns out, no, it's a bit of a puzzle, because you've got this scene connects to this later. Not in some non-linear way, but just because if your movie isn't all exposition, that's how it's going to be with all these different elements.
Somebody on Reddit was saying that, like, could you imagine the stuff that they have of Nicolas Cage in that interrogation scene that they didn't put into the movie? Like, it's got to be pure. Yeah. Like, it's got to be like 20 minutes of madness.
Right. The outtakes.
Yeah. Which, you know, he spent the entire fucking take just doing the whole thing.
Yeah, it's like, let's just film everything in one go and we'll call it a day.
Yeah. Brilliant, man. Yeah. Brilliant.
And the mommy-daddy scene in the car. Again, so... On paper, too, it's like, big deal. He screams mommy, daddy. Like, dude, this is highly fucking effective.
Dude.
Having
it. It's one of the more, like, less typical serial killer characters you see. And, like, this, it's like, even on TV, you don't see serial killers like him. It's almost like a stereotype, but, like, it's so effective with how strange he is as a person.
Yeah.
Like, he's that weirdo in the neighborhood that you just, like... We don't know he's a bad guy, but he sure makes everyone uncomfortable.
Right.
And yeah, we got that right before he does that. He's shopping in, like, a little general store, just being a fucking predator.
It's and creepy. See, like, that entire, I'm glad you brought up that scene, because it was in my head, like, the entire scene is extremely uncomfortable. And then she's like, that weird guy's here again. And it's like, damn, he does this a lot. Like,
he's just kind of pathetic.
Yeah. It's really, and it is uncomfortable. And it's a bit like, because I don't know quite what to expect from this fucking movie at any given second.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is he going to kill her right now? I just don't know.
Yeah.
So it has that tension there. When we talk about how, like, the movie's shot too, gosh, dude. It's so, like, artful. Like, he's standing on the side of the road with the snow behind him.
and waiting for, is it the snow? I don't know what snow, but the cops are coming.
Yeah.
You know? And like, it's just fucking a great, it's a great shot. It's well,
even that little moment where you think that he's waiting for the bus to get away.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, no, dude, he's waiting for the cops. He knows they're coming.
Right.
Like, don't be stupid.
Right. And then so it becomes more sinister, too.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, shit, he wants to get taken in.
Yeah.
You know, and then that whole idea of, like, once he's dead, it's like the Jedi thing. If you strike him down, he'll be more powerful, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, the bad version, because he can be everywhere now. You're not confined to just that one dude.
Where he can get his real long legs.
Yeah. And then the movie doesn't show, okay, it doesn't show most of its gore. And I know there's the old thing, the old adage, it's a Hitchcock thing. Like, if you don't show people thing, their head will fill in the rest.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a justification sometimes for a movie not going far enough if it's an R-rated movie sometimes. In this one, I find it very, because this is definitely a movie where your head is filling in. Your head has to keep working after the movie to yeah. fill in the rest. And so it does that with the kill scenes too, I think.
Yeah.
And the one piece of really extreme gore we get is him slamming his face into the table over and over again. Right?
Yeah. And gleefully.
So, gleefully. And it doesn't fucking like overuse gore. You know, which I think too, I know, you know, someone like Matt probably wanted more gore. And initially, like, I was like, you know, I hope this gets gorier. I'll be honest. Mm-hmm. And then it was just like, no, it doesn't. I feel bad vibes. I'm good.
Yeah.
You know? Because the sadness is gory as fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? Well, yeah, wanting more gore in this movie would be like, oh, I want to see more children get killed.
Exactly.
And it's like, it's okay, like, I like it. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, but. I don't. Yeah, I've already. Exactly. My head's filling in like some tragic bullshit
yeah.
already. Like, I'm. Yeah, the bad vibe is more powerful yeah. than seeing a kid's fucking head get blown.
Honestly, the shock of knowing that someone's about to get killed seconds before it happens is just as terrifying as seeing it. Like, when you see one of the agents, the Asian woman, you see. We're already into spoilers, but the mom with the shotgun
yeah.
approaching from behind, the whole theater was like freaking the fuck out.
Yeah.
Like, you don't need to see her face get blasted. You just got to hear the gunshot and Michael Monroe's reaction to it. I think it sells it perfectly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's like, there's certain images. I remember, you know, this months long viral marketing campaign, they have these images and these things where you see Michael Monroe from the side driving, then you see an old lady driving, which turns out to be her mom.
Yeah.
And then there, you see another old person driving, which turns out to be Nicolas Cage, which I didn't know in the trailer at the time.
Shit.
Right? And it was like fucking crazy. But then there's stuff where it showed like a lower half of a face or a doll face, and it's black smoke coming out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember seeing the trailer, like, what the fuck is the context for this scene? Yeah. Like, is this a dream sequence? And you watch this movie, and it's so intricate and specific that that's not a dream sequence. Like, that's a plot fucking point showing you what's going on. And I'm just, and it's just like, so it works on that level, but then just the image of it too. Like, he knows what is like a strong image.
Yeah. Yeah. Crazy imagery. Even the doll, the red eyes.
Oh, yeah. And the dark. And very like fucking, you know, when they talk about Silence of the Lambs. If you're going to, like, say, this is Silence of the Lambs by way of Rosemary's Baby. Like, mm-hmm. this is, like, that. It's as atmospheric as, like, a peak Polanski movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
If they fucked, this is the child. But it's very much its own thing. Yeah, talking about it, dude, it sucks I haven't seen this again so far. I've been seeing shit like Twisters and fucking Deadpool and Wolverine. No, just kidding.
Definitely check it out again. I even couldn't keep track, but there is so much going on in the background.
You saw it twice, right?
Yeah. The people said they saw the kind of like the devil imagery in the background like up to 8 times in the movie.
Yeah, it's I caught 3.
Yeah, I did.
And I know there's more.
Sophia said, yeah, she caught things I didn't with the devil imagery because I don't think I was looking for that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's my excuse,
dude. You weren't looking for the devil,
no, dude.
But he was looking for you, dude.
Well, okay, dude. You don't have to look for him because he's already in.
He's already there, dude.
We were looking for the devil. I was looking for the angels.
I was looking inward, dude.
When you saw that flag behind Trump, like curled up, it looked like an angel. It looked like an angel. Did you hear that one?
No.
Fuck That's off. What they fucking said.
But yeah, man, I think universally, I think long legs, it's if it isn't my favorite thing so far this year, it's tied.
It's got legs.
It's a tie with Night Swim.
Mm. But opposite, right? Like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That can be okay.
Yeah, as it is like that. As above, so below.
Oh, man. All right. Well, hey, that's the Eagles Your Podcast for fucking long legs, bro. Next episode, we talk about
Shyamalama Ding Dong.
Shyamalan it. It's right? been a long yeah. time. It's been a long time. So.
We'll Wait, we got to figure that out. Yeah.
It's going to be the movie.
Yeah, well, because it doesn't come out till next weekend.
Yeah, we're good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We should Let be fine. Me in now.
There's Nicolas Cage has a full version of that song. If you guys are interested.
They're fantastic, man. All right. This is Jorge signing out.
This is Jacob.
This is Rhett.
Later, idiots!
I'm not gonna worry wrinkles in my brow. Nothing's ever gonna be alright, no how. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world.